Welcome back, everyone. This is The Prepared Mindset. I'm your host, Austin, and let's dive in. It's been a great week. If you guys are listening to this, I'm recording this in advance because I do have some travel coming up. Last couple episodes, right, had Sully from Community First Project on, had the sit rep, and I think both of those things are going to kind of feed into today's discussion. You know, and also getting some training done. You know, had a great experience going out to Battlefield CQB. You know, you guys have been listening. You watch the social media for at least the last year or so, right? We have utilized the facility out in Westland, Michigan. It's actually a laser tag arena. It's just laid out much more like a shoot house than probably, I would say, 90% of laser tag places that I've ever been to, which isn't a huge sampling, but It is a good facility for it. Get to connect with Kyle from Two Vets Development Group, which is a training company here in Southern Michigan. So nice being able to connect with him, learn some things. He does things a little bit differently than I do, which is cool. It's one of the parts of this community and training and things that I really enjoy is that there's typically always more than one way to do anything, and getting outside perspectives, getting fresh ideas thrown at you. And here's the thing, doesn't mean I have to love all of them, right? Doesn't mean I have to take them and adopt them into what I'm going to try to do for everything. But it is also pretty illuminating to see, hey, there's different ways of doing this. There's different ways to enter a room. Here's different ways to hold security. Here's different ways to nonverbally communicate. All that stuff that, you know, I really kind of geek out on with the CQB aspect of training and things. Got to kind of hang out with Kyle for a while, get a couple of the guys in on some reps. We had a couple new folks show up, so that was always cool from a community building aspect. It's very cool to be able to meet folks, especially those that are within an hour's drive, you know, people I would consider to be, in fact, you know, local, right, to join me with what's going on with Prepared Mindset, with our training, and all that good stuff. And of course, you know, got the Orion Training Group class coming up in about a week and a half's time, and I'm really excited for that. You know, when I took it last year, it was a big turning point in my life. Not just because I got to go hang out with Jared and Jason. I don't like listen, guys. I fanboy, but I'm not going to say that hanging out with Jason Ransom for the first time in person was a pivotal point in my life. Maybe I should. I mean, he is a handsome man, but. I was leaving one job. The way it worked out last year, I literally, the Thursday before class, was my last day with my last job. I had to take and pack up all of my computer stuff. I'll never forget it too, because like even on my last day, right, at like 1:30 in the afternoon, I had like my final meeting call I had to just be on. And somebody was like, "Ooh, can you go ahead and try and like put that together for us?" And I remember I have never in my professional career been one of those people that was like, "That's not my job." But in this instance, I was like, that's really not my job. And I'll be honest with you guys, I'm out of here in about an hour and a half. I'm not doing that. I will do you guys the solid and get you in touch with, you know, the other colleague that was kind of picking up that work and see if he can take care of that for you. But at any rate, got done at like 2 o'clock or 2:30, packed up all my shit in a box and taped it up and everything. Had to run it out to the UPS store, drop it all off and everything, send it all back. So I get up super early the next morning, drive Josh and I out to Westland for the 3-day Orion Training Group class, which was, you know, it was outstanding. Get through the class, super exhausted. Get home, dinner time ish on Sunday night, just so I can get up first thing in the morning on Monday to get a rental car and drive 4.5 hours down to Columbus, Ohio for like new work onboarding stuff. And was there for, three and a half days. It's just crazy. Absolutely crazy. So this year things are a little bit more calm. It's a 2-day class instead of three. I'm not switching jobs. But I had a great experience last year. Everybody I talked to that took the course for the most part, I think had just outrageously awesome things to say. So very, very much looking forward to, round two. Additionally, just because I've had this discussion, there's stuff going on out in the Reddit sphere on companies, which I'm not going to name here, stealing money from people for night vision. That's really, really cool. Guys, we have not gotten to our ad space yet, but if you guys are looking for a very based company that is doing the right thing by so many people right now, go check out Protection Group Denmark and their helmets. There's Reddit threads out there about it. We put up a post today about a little bit about it on Instagram, and you guys can go back and look for that too. But really, really cool. They're not a sponsor. They did send me a helmet, but they're not a sponsor. Just a great company. They make a really good product, and they're trying their best to be a positive member of the community. And I think it's awesome, and certainly worth bringing light to and talking about, because man, this community, right, this industry is. Man, it's kind of fucked up in a lot of different ways, and that's going to be part of what we get into and what we talk about today. Is very simply that it's a perception thing. It is an issue of getting people to have honest conversations and see things for what they are here in the 2A community, and that's on both sides because we have people who are very hard headed and very firmly planted in their beliefs. On both sides, pro 2A and anti 2A. So it'll be a little bit interesting. Some of you guys might get a little bit upset about this stuff, but here's the thing. Sometimes you need to hear the hard truths to be able to make a good decision, to be able to kind of see a better way. And I think honestly, right, to ultimately move forward in a way that's going to more positively benefit and impact all of us. And I'm talking like everybody, you know, whether you're pro-gun, you're anti-gun, you think that prepping is very, very tinfoil, you think whatever, right? But before we get into this week's discussion, I want to say thank you to our friends at Custom Night Vision. You guys are an outstanding company. Their website is customnightvision.com. They're based out of Houston, Texas, and they're fantastic to work with, you guys. If you need help, they have a chat function. It's built into the lower right-hand corner of the website, which again is customnightvision.com. You can go out, you can order night vision to them, and guess what? It's actually going to show up at your door. You're going to pay them money, and they're going to give you night vision. They're not going to take your money and then sit on it for 6 to 12 weeks and feed you lies about being in Dubai. Consult Reddit for more detail on that. But no lie, guys. Ben and Kevin, Trevor, the whole team over at Custom are some outstanding individuals, and their mission as a company is to bring the most transparent buying experience to all of you guys. So whether you're looking for, you know, a PVS-14 or a Tonto housing, a single tube device, which guys, I just had this conversation with a friend last night, get a PVS-14. You don't need to save up double and triple the money to get into your favorite flavor of dual housings. PVS-14 is the most prolific, most common, most serviceable night vision device that's out there on the market, and there's a damn good reason for it. It's because they're awesome, they work, they're accessible financially, there's parts everywhere, there's accessories for them. Guys, single tubes are awesome devices. I would not have any qualms rocking a PVS-14. However, that said, if you guys are in the market for either an upgrade to jump into a dual tube housing, or you want to make your first purchase and you just want to swing for the fences right away, Custom has a full stock of dual tube housings. They have tubes from L3 and L-bit, whether it's white phosphor, green phosphor. They got NNVT and Photonis tubes if you're trying to go on the budget route of things, but still have a good experience with it. And they also carry a full line of helmets, helmet mounts, white light, lasers, all kinds of really, really good stuff, so that you have a one-stop shop for all of your night vision needs. Again, you guys, the website is customnightvision.com. Head on over, let them know that Prepared Mindset sent you. They're going to take fantastic care of you guys, and you're going to love it. I guarantee it. Also want to say thank you to the team over at Orion Training Group, you guys. Like I mentioned a moment ago, we are T-minus a week and a half from the Michigan Structure Clearance course. It is sold out, which is awesome, and it just kind of highlights in a very small way how in demand the training from Orion is. They're based out of Louisiana, so if you guys are in the South, you want to check out their courses, head on over to OrionTrainingGroup.com. You can see the entire course calendar and schedule for yourself. So if they're in a city or a town near you, hey, jump into a class. And if you don't see anything near you, maybe it's geographically something that's kind of away from their footprint, send them an email, reach out, talk to Jared, have a conversation. Hey, what's it going to take for me to get you guys out here for a class? That's what I did, and that's why they're coming back for round two up here in Michigan as they swing through to go do a SWAT school in Indiana. So really, really cool geographically how far there's cadre members available for Orion Training Group. You guys, again, OrionTrainingGroup.com. Head over to the website, check it out for yourselves. And last, certainly not least here, are our friends over at 100 Concepts, you guys. 100concepts.com. That is the website. They're a fantastic bunch of dudes making some really, really great gear, from their scope caps to the scrim to the light caps to the pro scope caps. Or if you're one of those dudes, you just run a red dot on your rifle, maybe it's a piggyback, right? You know, you have a scope LPVO, you're already running the scope cap or the pro scope cap, you have a piggyback red dot. Now they have their hex cap series of anti-reflective devices. You can go ahead and pick one of those bad boys up and pop it on. Glare, reflection, it's gone. The covers are fantastic. The caps are great. I run them on all of my guns, you guys. Head on over to 100concepts.com. Check it all out for yourself. And additionally, they now carry Surefire flashlights and EOTech optics, you guys. So making moves, doing big things. Their company motto is do good, be dangerous, live free. I mean, you got to love it, right? What could be better? Fantastic bunch of guys. One more time here. It's 100concepts.com. Head to the website, check out their entire catalog of products, and pick yourself up some gear today. So, like I said, this week we are jumping into a discussion around having an honest conversation, public perception. You know, our last discussion was with Andrew Sullivan, Sully, right? He is the founder of Community First Project. And if you guys haven't listened to that episode, I would implore you to either after this or, you know, pause this and jump back to that. Go check out that discussion because it was fantastic. And he mentioned, and we discussed that winning the battle of public perception, right? The public relations side of the fight, right, is a huge one, especially in 2025. And this is, you know, for Sully, it's lobbying with local politicians and state level politicians to get access to grant funds to help bring training to law enforcement officers to stop things like, you know, public shootings, mass shootings. And of course, these are things where people see these on the news. Everyone is very sad, obviously outraged, upset, right? Hurt. Your lives, you know, if you have a loved one that's impacted there, that could, it could change your life forever, right? And it's not funny. It's actually, I guess, maybe a little bit ironic, though, that we have people that are screaming that we want to take the guns away because that's going to solve everyone's problem. We need to deregulate the police. Or sorry, defund. I'm sorry, not deregulate. We need to increase regulation. That's it. Increase regulation on police and decrease funding. And if you guys have, you worked in office jobs, you know that when you get more stringent with the regulations and the procedures, and then you also decrease the amount of funding and training and support, those things are not good bedfellows, but they very often do come together. It's a really ironic thing. It's very upsetting to deal with, very difficult to work through, and even more difficult to be successful with. So working in law enforcement and things, right? The public perception is in many, many cities, in many cases, because of the way we are set up in our current culture, our current communities, is, you know, hey, police officers are not your friend. You know, if you are of a certain racial or ethnic background, you know, I'm Mexican, so I have dark skin, especially during the summer, or, you know, you guys know what I'm talking about, then the police are looking for you specifically, and you have to grow up. I see people post about it all the time on Facebook, about how their kids have to grow up in a world where they have to be afraid of the police, and they hope that this can change. And here's the thing, it can, it will, it is changing. The public perception right now is that all police are evil and bad, and that's because the mass mainstream media really only focuses on the bad things, because that draws more eyes, it draws more clicks, it gets more downloads, it sells more papers, and it makes more money. And guys, we know money's the bottom line here. That's not a new concept. I don't think I'm explaining anything new to any of you guys when I say that. It's the way that the world works. And certainly policing, law enforcement, and the media, none of that is new and different. The public perception battle is that we need to have more training, better equipment. This is only part of the discussion, by the way. We'll expound on this in a moment. To get things like armored vehicles. And I mentioned this very specifically when I was talking with Sully, because I've had those encounters where I go to the open house for my local department. I talk with SRT team members. I talk about how they got the vehicle through grant money. By the way, it didn't cost me, and that's in my own city, right? So I wouldn't sit here and lie about this, because it's literally coming out of my own fucking pocket if I am lying. Grant money to get this vehicle, which was commissioned for, I assume, some kind of military effort, and then not used, not utilized. Okay, well, cool. So you guys have this. It's not a weapon. It is personal protective equipment. Essentially, it's an armored Bearcat or armored vehicle or whatever. I'm down with my local law enforcement having access to that. So in the event that there is a barricaded, you know, gunman or a mass shooting incident, God forbid, any of those things, right? They have the equipment necessary to carry out the mission of neutralizing those threats. And furthermore, they not only have the equipment, they have the training. And where this starts to cross into like our realm and our conversation as prepared citizens, it's funny because we harp on this and bitch about this all the time. I get shit on in my comment section on YouTube about guys telling me it doesn't matter what rifle you have, it doesn't matter about what length it is, and all the fancy shit you put on there. You know, training's what matters, and you're 100% right. Training is what matters. But here's the thing: what would you rather go into an actual conflict with? A 380 pocket pistol that holds 7 rounds, or an AR-15 that holds 30 rounds with multiple magazines, and also be armed with the knowledge, right? The knowledge, the skill, the training, right, of how to employ that in the most effective, to a degree, the most safe manner possible, right? But it's different. When we have that conversation with police, the perception is that they don't need that, they shouldn't have it, and that comes from both sides of the fence, guys. Like, just be fucking honest about it. There's a lot of you listening think we shouldn't put any money into police training. We should reduce police. I mean, I get it, the libertarian side of things. I understand to an extent. I'm not saying that that's the libertarian agenda, but there's a piece of that that's in there. And a lot of people that identify and side themselves with being libertarian, that's one of the things that they attach themselves to. So, I mean, the hypocrisy is crazy, right? Because we want that for ourselves. We would expect that of ourselves to defend ourselves and our families and our communities and things. But then we want to turn around and deny that of those who, as an occupational function, right? We task them with protecting our communities with, here's the thing, like, are you realistically going to leave your job to drive 25 minutes across town to go stop a school shooter? I mean, like, everybody can sit here and say, yes, I will. But the reality is, no, you're probably not going to find out about it until it's already happened. And part of that's by design, right? You want to control information at the scene and blah, blah, blah. And we don't have to go down that. But my point being is that there needs to be better training. And the perception is that the police need less training. They need to be less militant. And I get that. The honest, like, that's what I'm saying. It needs to be an honest conversation, you guys, is that more training is necessary. And if we're worried about the optics of things, like, oh, that gear looks too military, you know, so an armored vehicle, they can't have that. Okay. Oh, those weapons, those look too military. We can't have that. They can't wear those color uniforms. All right. Well, you know, I understand, but do we think that maybe we're just being a little bit too sensitive? Do we also think that maybe we're looking at the wrong issues and talking about the wrong fucking problems? Because to me, that's what this is. It's a lot of focus in the wrong areas, in the wrong places, on the wrong things to address the wrong problems. If you're trying to address public perception, then I think there needs to be, it's done through community outreach. It's also done, trust is built through success. You want your communities to trust your police officers. You have to be successful in your endeavors and your missions. I guarantee you it will be several decades. Several before the community in Uvalde has any trust, any faith at all in their police officers, because the training was substandard. Obviously, they responded absolutely terribly there. And I hate to keep going back to that, but it's like this shining example of every failure culminating into a single point. And, you know, to take it on the other side of these things, we have these discussions around private gun ownership, concealed carry, the Second Amendment, guns in general, right? And people get, understandably, they get very, very upset about it. They have all kinds of issues. They want to see people disarmed. I had a conversation yesterday, actually, at work. So I do have a LinkedIn page. I do have the podcast listed on there, and it got brought up in a discussion, not in a bad way, but it's something that I hold very close to the chest. Because, you know, in today's day and age, in today's society, it can lead to issues, right? So, had a really, really good conversation actually with coworkers who are of a different, I won't say belief system, but I think politically they lie on the other side of things than I do, but they were really open, you know, talked about what I do here and what the mission here and what I talk about on the podcast is and the success that I've seen. And they both thought it was very good, very cool stuff. They think that the safety piece, talking about safety is a paramount part of the conversation. And here's the thing, it is. And inadvertently, we talk about safety all the time with firearms training, with the gear, the kit and everything. Being able to operate proficiently, I don't mean use the word like you are an operator, but operate proficiently. So perform a task or a function. So maybe, you know, tactically that's clearing a structure, right? With a handgun or a rifle, right? Super high level, very simple. Don't read into the weeds here. Being able to perform that successfully is, to an extent, an indication of a degree of safety, right? Because I would say, and any of you guys who have been through an instructor course or instructor school for structure clearance or CQB, if you blow a safety check, if you muzzle people, like those are the kinds of things, those safety failures are a direct fail. I think you get like one warning and then a fail, something like that. I don't even know. I've never been to one. But I do know that that's a thing, especially in firearms instructor courses too, where if you're trying to get accredited as some sort of an instructor, safety violations are a fail. So when we're talking about being able to train successfully, train efficiently, and be more capable, there is a layer of safety that is baked into all of that that doesn't really need to be spoken of because, and we can, any of you guys listening to this that have been around firearms for any amount of time, you know that the firearm safety rules are omnipresent. Right? They are always around. They are always at the forefront of your mind. Even if your weapon is clear, locked, you know, bolt locked back to the rear, whatever, you're doing CQB with dry reps like we do every Thursday night, there's still certain safety rules that we have to adhere to, right? Like we try our best not to muzzle each other. We, you know, given it's a, you know, we put chamber flags in that instance, but, you know, out on the range, your gun is on safe. Your finger is off the trigger at all times. Your muzzle's in a safe direction. You never point the gun at anything that you don't want to destroy, right? Those are, it's a given. And I hate saying that because it's kind of an obvious thing, but it's a given in the way that it is always there. It is always part of what you're doing. It is always part of what you're working on. It is always a consideration. And because of that, we kind of lose that thought to a degree where we go, yeah, I mean, we don't talk about safety all the time. Like, yeah, you do, because safety is part of completing a mission or, you know, whatever, successfully. It has to be. Otherwise, to me anyways, that's a failure. So when we talk about, you know, firearms and safety of firearms handling and teaching and training, to me, that all bakes into the same conversation. And when you're trying to have these conversations, you're trying to bridge these gaps with individuals who don't see these things the same way you do. I'm not even saying that they have to be inherently against firearm ownership, because I think a lot of people are actually very open to the concept. I do. I think there's a lot of people out there that are open to the concept of firearms ownership, and they just want more common sense gun laws. And I think that that statement in and of itself, we all agree with. And I'm going to explain it. I think we all agree that we want common sense gun laws. Where we disagree is on the definition of the word common, or the phrase, I'm sorry, common sense. Because common sense for us is very, very different for people who consider common sense to be, well, we need to get rid of all the guns. Just ban all the guns. That's common sense. If there is no gun to have here, then nobody can commit a crime with it. And in a vacuum, that would be a true statement. But we don't live in a vacuum. And it's absolutely the most like soul, like crippling conversation to try and, you know, have that conversation with a flat earth person that like actually absolutely believes that that is the solution. And, oh, well, look at Europe, look at this country, look at Australia, and they haven't had issues and we should be more like them. And it's like, don't even fucking get me started. Because there's a whole lot of other data and evidence you can point to that shows that those have been abject failures for not only preventing, it's not gun crime, you know, that you're looking at, it should be all violent crime. So when you look at terrorist attacks with bombs and knives and vehicles and shit, and yeah, even the Paris attacks in, I think it was like 2015, pretty sure that guns are not widely available in France. I could be wrong on that, but they had a pretty significant terror attack. We had Joe Fasanella on at the beginning of the year talking about that after we had a terrorist attack on U.S. soil on New Year's Day morning or New Year's Eve night, whatever you want to call it, down in New Orleans, right? And that's the example, right? Oh yeah, look at Europe. They're so fucking safe over there. I'm going to move to Europe because I hate this country and Donald Trump and all you know, Bible thumping gun lovers. And it's like, okay, cool. I mean, if that's going to make you happy, go. I'm not going to stop you, but I think that you're missing the point entirely. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we need to have an like honest conversation with each other. And sometimes that means having the discussion. Here's the thing. Like I just said, I don't think that we on either side have an objection to common sense gun laws or gun reform. The difference lies in what we deem to be common sense. So for people who, like I said, that don't carry guns, don't know about guns, don't train with them, don't shoot with them. They think that it is common sense that we need to have all these rules and all these regulations put into the licensing portion of a concealed carry permit. Now, personally, I think that we should have constitutional carry and there should be concealed carry reciprocity, things like that all over the country. I really do. And in a, and again, in a perfect world, in a vacuum, we would be able to culturally at a community level hold ourselves accountable, police ourselves as a community for standards. So, hey, you want to carry a firearm? Cool. That means that you're going to train at least once a month. You're going to dry fire train at least once a week. You're going to be capable. You're going to carry a platform that you can be capable with. And you're going to know and understand when you should pull your firearm, how you should do it, when you should just observe and move away from the situation. You know what I mean? Like, essentially, a lot of the stuff that we talk about here on the podcast in terms of being a prepared individual. But that's where we also have people in this community. And sometimes the annoying part is they are the loudest ones, are the ones who are the most fucking wrong. And they'll sit here and say, no, we shouldn't have any of those laws. We shouldn't have any of those things. And you guys all agree with me. And we go, yeah, we agree with you. And you find out this fucker hasn't shot his gun in 4 years. They carry like a 5-shot revolver, which I try not to do too much revolver hate, but like, I'm a Glock guy. You guys know that. They carry a 5-shot revolver. They shoot it terribly because of the recoil and they never learn good grip. They never learn good stance. Their draw is janky at best. And they carry in like an ankle holster or, you know, like small of back or something like that. And they think that, and this is the dangerous part, is they think that that alone makes them capable. The fact that they possess a firearm makes them an asset to any situation, you know, and that's really not true. It goes back to what we were just talking about a moment ago, where we advocate all the time in the civilian space for not only having the right equipment, whether it's a firearm or holster, a laser, a flashlight, body armor, you know, whatever have you, right? But having the right training, having the knowledge that's going to make you more capable with those tools. And we have a very large, I would say actually it's a much larger piece of our community that advocates in that way, where they don't have the training and they believe that since they've been shooting since they were 6-7 years old, they don't need training. And nobody can be able to teach them anything that they don't already know. And they take it further and they actually work against their own community, whether they realize, like their own community in terms of the 2A space. Let me be clear on that. They work against that effort, which they're screaming about, right? By sitting here and chastising those of us that go out and get tactical gear. Why do you need all that? You don't need night vision. You don't need a plate carrier. That's silly. Well, okay, maybe you don't see that. That's a matter of your perspective, and you're also fucking ignorant, because here's the thing. If you are planning on drawing your firearm, it would have to be, in legal terms, right, fear of grievous bodily injury, harm, fear of death to yourself or another, right? I mean, I'm ad-libbing that, but you guys get the point, right? So wouldn't that mean that in many of those instances that that other person may also have a gun, or multiple persons may have multiple guns? You know, you talk about preparing for these end times and things, and then you go out, you buy a chest rig from the surplus store and a 20-inch AR rifle, and oh, I'm good to go. Like, well, you know, personal protective equipment being what it is, rather than buying like 18 fucking Sons of Liberty rifles, which are great, but for some reason they attract a certain element. I'm just going to say that. Instead of buying like 18 of those, don't you think you could maybe just buy like 3, maybe whatever, set them up for different needs and uses for you and your wife, or you and your, you know, adult age children or something, and then spend the rest of the money on personal protective equipment, medical supplies, maybe some canned food. Maybe you don't spend all of your fucking money on this hobby, this lifestyle, and you take some, you know, take them out to dinner or vacation or something. I mean, I digress. Don't even get me started down that road. But the perception is that you don't need that equipment and you shouldn't train with it. And it's why we have so many people that go to the range that are new. They don't have a training group. Maybe they only get to train in an indoor range, or they go to a sportsman's club, an outdoor range that has a lot of people doing a lot of different things, and they're apprehensive. They feel weird about wearing kit, about wearing their plate carrier, wearing their helmet, and so they don't. So they don't train in it, because the perception is, or the believed perception is, that you're going to be looked at as weird, you're going to be chastised, you're going to be chased out of the club, you're going to be asked to leave. And here's the thing, I belong to an outdoor range. And I've heard of, range officers and board members ask people about it. They don't care. They tell you in your in your orientation, that's what it is. Your new member orientation. You can wear whatever you want out here. We have guys that run around in kit and helmets and plate carriers and all that stuff. We got guys that do 3-gun competitions that slick down. We got guys out here shooting skeet and trap. Just be safe. The rules of the range exist for your safety and to keep the range in good, you know, working order and a nice condition. Which is good because not every club is like that. But people have this idea that if they show up wearing their kit, they're somehow going to be stared at. That, you know, we have like that inner awkwardness when you don't know what you don't know about guns and training and capability, and then you like lock yourself out of accessing that part of your training opportunities, and you do yourself a tremendous disservice by leaving the kit at home. And again, that's part of it. You know, I had the conversation last night with somebody at CQB training. Yeah, hey, that carrier, those kind of suck because of where the shoulder straps are positioned. So you're always kind of fighting with your stock and your shoulder strap to get a good shoulder pocket, a good shoulder position when you mount up that rifle. And those are things that you need to work on, that you need to overcome out on the range, and you can't if you never bring your kit out to train. And so it becomes this like self-fulfilling prophecy of wanting to get better, but never actually being able to fully address the things that are going to make you better, and all because of the fear that you're going to be perceived as some kind of weirdo, some kind of gun nut. And here's like the remedy to it is it's just, you have to desensitize people to it. If you were to share two different photos, right, on Facebook, one of you wearing like the amber tinted shooting glasses, the big old fisherman's vest, shooting a revolver, nobody would say anything. However, if you post a picture of you, Faro FCPC with a helmet, with nods, and you're shooting a rifle with a suppressor and a laser on it, people are going to go, well, what the hell are you gearing up for? World War III? And, you know, in principle, in its fundamentals, right, there is not actually too much that's different between those two things, is there? But because we have people that have drawn these conclusions for themselves, and we have this public image, this public perception, if you will, right, that those things are very different. One is very acceptable, one is not. Because we've been told, you know, hey, wooden furniture, okay, good, that's a hunting rifle, that's fine. Scary black rifle, ooh, that's bad. And you have to be willing to be patient and be honest and have conversations with people and just explain to them, like, hey, listen, it's got nothing to do with the color. It's got nothing to do with the furniture. You know, like, show people, put it side by side. Here, this is a shotgun. This is a 12 gauge slug, and it's a piece of lead the size of like your thumb, right? And then you hold up a 5.56 round, you know, 223, whatever. And it's like, it's tiny by comparison, and go, you know, which one's going to cause more damage? Most people go, well, the slug, look at the size of that thing. You go, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you would be right. But how come this is okay and this little guy is not? And it's because of, I mean, it's largely because of the media. We can't put it all on the media, but a lot of it is because of the media. And we've had several generations, and this is, I don't like blaming our parents' generation for problems. I hear about it all the time because I work in finance. So I hear about it all the time. Oh yeah, the baby boomers or whatever. I mean, I think my parents are between boomers and millennial. I don't know if it's Gen X or whatever. They ruined the economy. They ruined the housing industry. They ruined this. They're fucking us over, and it's all their fault. And it's like, okay, listen, they probably made the best decisions they could at the time based off the information they had. Or yes, maybe they were selfish fucking pricks, but how is that any different than what we do with all kinds of other things? Because hooray for us and fuck everyone else. Right. So, but I digress. So it's this perception thing. We have to be willing to have the conversation. We have to be willing to be honest about it. And if you don't have a good way to explain away why you, and I want to say you don't have to be necessarily accountable. You don't have to explain yourself to people, but if you want to win the battle of public perception, you kind of do. Like, hey, because that's one of the questions that we all get, that some of us love getting, like, I love getting it, and then some people really fucking hate that question. Why do you need that? And I kind of love it, and I'll tell you why. Because it gives me the opportunity to explain to people what I use that tool for, or that piece of equipment, or that piece of kit. And it also allows the opportunity for them to voice their usually nonsensical, toothless, opposing argument to it. Oh, that looks really militaristic. Aren't you going to look like you're in a militia or something? Which actually, remarkably, even though it's very much unconstitutional, militias here in Michigan are outlawed. So that phrase is very, like, it's a very bad thing here in Michigan. But you can tell people, like, well, you know, here's the thing. Use camouflage for a lot of different reasons. Like, in the event that I had to use this for something, you know, some military type of action or response, maybe I do want to wear something. It's not real tree, you know, but maybe it's, you know, multicam because it works in a multitude of environments. Real tree, those patterns are usually very specific to very unique environmental factors and conditions, and they're used for hunting. It's a very different application, but the purpose is very much the same. We don't look at hunters weird for wearing their real tree and shit while they're out there trying to kill Bambi's mom, but we're going to look at guys like me and all of you and say, well, that's weird because you're wearing, you know, military multicam. And at the same time, we have people within our own fucking community that want to give each other shit for wearing Ranger Green because you look like a fucking fed. It's like, listen, dude, if the feds were interested in you, if the feds were onto you, they're not really going to care. Like, I mean, I don't get the whole, oh, you can't wear that camo because that's a fed color. Who the hell cares? There's probably a good reason why they wear it. You know, I know Lucas from T-Rex Arms has talked about it. You know, Ranger Green looks very professional. So if you actually are invested in trying to be a prepared citizen and you want to help your community and you want to, again, help alter and adjust the way that the community sees people in the preparedness space, you want to look professional. You want to appear approachable. Because by many of these people who are critical of the things that you and I all work on, whether it's preparedness, it's training, it's medical, it's shooting, whatever, many of those people still look to and look for law enforcement, police officers when they need help. And law enforcement, for just this very reason, has a very professional and distinct look about them. They wear dark blues. Their tactical teams usually wear blacks and Ranger Green and stuff. You don't see them. I mean, sometimes they rock the multicam, but they're not in multicam black. They're not in fucking Flecktarn or you know, splatter camo or anything goofy like that. And that's the shit that we have to work on fighting against, because here's the thing. You look like one of the fucking Boogaloo boys if you're rocking a Hawaiian shirt with splatter camo. And the fact that some people are listening to this going, fuck it, send it, I don't give a shit what people think, you're only making it worse. And if that upsets you, I am sorry. Not really, but I mean, like, it's the reality. Like, hey, you're upset about paying taxes. I am sorry that paying taxes upsets you. It upsets me too. But you know what? The reality is, until something changes, I mean, and it would have to be something obviously very drastic, we're going to keep on paying those taxes. Why? Because I need to keep a roof over my family. I like having a home in the winter here in Michigan because it gets fucking cold. And I am just going to keep on lobbying for politicians that I think are more in line with my goals of not paying taxes. Same thing with why we all tend to throw our support behind the Republican Party. Not because they do things that we love all the fucking time, but because they are usually between the two choices of Republican and Democrat, and I don't want to make this super political, but they're more likely to put their support behind giving me my gun rights, or at the very least, protecting my gun rights. We fucking hope. Now, getting back to the overall discussion here, the perception, again, behind a lot of this is because the politics, like I just did right there, very, very easily, we've tied a lot of these issues directly to politics. The perception by people is that anybody of a conservative nature who appreciates firearms and things has these fiery tempers, and we're the problem. The other side's the problem. No, you are. And you have to approach things with a calm, cool, and collected demeanor, and you have to come to the table with facts. You have to come to the table with information. You have to be able to articulate what's going on and be willing to have a conversation, however heated it might be, and then also have the restraint to not just let it degenerate down to name calling and he said and she said and throwing a fit and, you know, F you, no F you, I don't give a shit. And it's like, guys, we're not getting anywhere with this. And be willing to have those conversations. You know, like I said, I talked to a couple coworkers. Probably fall, I'm going to assume, on the liberal side of things. And that's okay. We don't need everybody to love guns and want to train and want to shoot and want to protect their home with a firearm. We just want to get to a point, right, of live and let live, more or less. We want to have our guns. If they concede that we're fine having the guns, then, and they ask for us to be responsible with them, I don't see a problem with that. Now, the degree of responsible is what we then have the arguments and stuff over, because, oh, well, you should only be able to have 5 rounds in the gun. Nope. Here, and that's where, again, this is where the perception comes in, is that we've had the media telling people for so long that anything over 10 rounds is high capacity. I mean, I remember when it was only 20 rounds. Anything over 20 rounds is high capacity. Now we're basically anything over 10 rounds, because that's what California deemed the handgun capacity limit. Now it's 10 rounds in handguns. It's 10 rounds in rifles. Anything more than that, and then we had, yeah, anything more than that is too much. It's high capacity, which is that's completely arbitrary. I would personally say anything over 40 rounds is high capacity if I were to give an arbitrary designation. I don't really give a shit. I think it's a stupid idea in the first place. But then we had our previous president, you know, Sleepy Joe Biden, getting up in front of the media at every possible opportunity, at least, you know, while he was campaigning, talking about how you don't need all of that. You don't need 30 rounds for deer hunting. If you need 30 rounds or you need 20 rounds to go deer hunting, I got news for you, Jack. You got bigger problems than getting a deer. And it's like, you're a fucking moron, dude. Plus, how many people you know that actually hunt deer or would want to hunt deer with a 5.56 gun with 30 rounds in it? It's usually a large caliber bolt gun because they're inherently more accurate, because here's the thing. If you miss the deer, they're taking off. You're losing it, right? And yeah, so you shoot the bolt gun, more accurate, large caliber. And guess what? Those internal magazines usually don't hold more than 5 rounds. Like it's kind of a non-issue in 2025, but we bring all of this stuff into, the spotlight and we have these discussions anyway, and it all ties back together. Honestly, it's the battle of public perception. We fight it whether we're in the civilian space, we fight it if we're in the law enforcement, and in a lot of times even in the military space, right? It always comes down to, why do you need that? Why can't you do without that, right? And as a civilian, we at least have the convenient, I hate using the word convenient because that indicates that it's not something we're entitled to. It's not something that we have a right to, which by our own constitution, we do, right? We do have a right to these things. But at least as a civilian, you can say, fuck you, it's America, I want it. So therefore, I'm going to have it. So with night vision, lasers, suppressors, I guess you could, if you really wanted to go through all the hoops and everything, select fire devices are, you know, something you could get. It's an NFA item and it's a huge pain in the butt, I'm told. So am I going to personally pursue that? No. But if someone was going to try and give me hell and say, why do you need that? Because I want to have it and I have not done anything to disqualify myself from that ownership. And they go, well, what would you use it for? Well, in that case, you should, I would think, at least be able to articulate why you want it. Because suppressive fire in a squad environment is an important tactical tool that you can use to ensure your own safety, survivability, and survivability of your team and your overall effectiveness. So in the event that something kinetic did happen, you have that as a choice, as a option. So you're just going to, you know, go to the gun range and just spray and pray all over the fucking place. And that's what I think a lot of people assume is going to happen. It's not true. But if you can at least explain it away, people may not be super thrilled with the answer, but I think a lot more people would be very impressed if you were able to sit there, provide that explanation. They'd probably go, huh, wow, I didn't know that. Okay. Like, I think that seems a little bit out of, you know, what's necessary or reasonable, but okay. Like, clearly you've done some research on this. You've put your time in and your thought and you know what you want. So, okay. You know, whatever. And then when you can even take it a step further and go, just so you know, not everybody can have this. And here's the steps that I went through. You can explain the legal process to it. It helps shift the perception that this is not an easy to get item. And that's part of it too. You know, people want to yell and scream about the laws without understanding them, and it impacts us as civilians, because then it makes it easier to vote away what we do have left. Semi-automatic does not mean, you know, AR doesn't mean automatic rifle. Semi-automatic does not mean you hold down the trigger and it's automatic. That's literally the definition of automatic, is it automatically does it for you. Semi means, you know, one pull, one shot, and people are just completely dumbfounded. But that's how basic this discussion can get sometimes, right? Is just that people don't know what they don't know. And it has to be, as like ambassadors to our community with a vested interest and desire to improve things. And that should, I know it's cool. You hear people like me and other entities and talking heads right out here in the 2A space talk about adding to our communities, improving our communities, doing things to more positively impact the Second Amendment community. Cool. You should do that. At the same time, you have to be invested in it. Even people, you're not an influencer, cool. You have to be invested in this. Well, I don't really give a shit. I don't have time for that. Nope, you have to, because I'm telling you what's going to happen. I am telling you that if we keep letting this slide after 40 years of losing our gun rights and everything, it's going to continue on that slide and it's going to pick up pace. And we saw it. They tried so many times during the last 4 years in the Biden administration to go ahead and take away guns. They tried to capitalize on the momentum that they had built through how they built and how they augmented public perception to point at the scary black guns, to point at people like you and me and say that we're the problem, to point at the guns and say those are the problems. And all the while, they're actually making additional moves and changes that like led to some of the breakdowns in society. Oh, it's fine to assault a police officer. Open the borders up. Let's flood the country with illegals who are committing crimes like, and not, I'm not talking about committing crimes like tax evasion or fraud or whatever, which, I mean, that's kind of a separate discussion. I'm not excusing those, to be clear, but it's a little bit outside the scope of what I'm talking about here. But we have people coming in that are part of cartel organizations that work in human trafficking and drug trafficking and do some absolutely heinous shit. And that's okay. We're supposed to just be openly, you know, openly contribute to the downfall of our own community and society, while also turning around saying that the people that want to be more accountable, want to protect their community, protect their society, are the problem, and we need to get rid of them. And because you see it on the news, you see professional-looking people who are well-spoken, you see the leaders of the country, or at least at that time, right, telling folks who don't have the gumption or the wherewithal to do their own research and to dig into it, to acquire the real information behind it, they believe this now as truth. And then further, it's being countered with, oh, well, what those people are saying about the guns isn't true. You know, that's fake news. These are weapons of war. There's only one reason to have an AR, and that's to kill a man. It's like, well, I think that's an oversimplification and perhaps a little bit graphic and grotesque. But yes, I mean, to be clear, all firearms were made to kill. They were designed and invented and created for, war. They were then augmented for use with big game hunting to feed your families, which, surprise you guys, guess what? Meat comes from animals. What did people used to do before we had mass processing? They hunted for it. And what did they use? Bow and arrows and then firearms. So here's the thing, like that argument, I think I try to debunk that, like, oh, well, there's only one reason to have it. That's to kill somebody. Yes, that's the killing is the only function of these firearms. See my earlier rant and raving about the safety factor that we inherently pull into every piece of the discussion because it is omnipresent. So that's not a gun issue. That's a malice issue. That's a morality issue. If you're concerned that, you know, guns are going to kill people, guns don't kill people. They are a tool used to kill people. Statistically speaking, you're just as likely to die from a claw hammer or a baseball bat or a golf club, you know, an ice pick. And people don't want to hear that either. And it's like, okay, well, you not wanting to hear it, and that's not my problem. You not wanting to hear it and it not being the truth are two completely different things. It can be true and you don't want to hear it, and that both of those things can be true, and that's still not my problem. But I make it my problem while trying to combat this to, again, alter our perception. Have the honest conversation. If you're one of the people that's sitting here going, I don't want to do that, or, you know, I think all gun laws are unconstitutional, like I've gone through a whole bunch of shit here, right? And you're sitting there going, I'm not fucking doing that, he's fucking wrong, then you're part of the problem. Have an honest conversation. Hey, how do we fix this? How do I contribute to being a positive part of resolving this? And yeah, you know what? Is it going to be fun? No. Is going to the doctor fun? No. Is going to the dentist fun? No, it's not. Sitting down with your retirement planner, is that usually fun? Not usually. If somebody works in finance and enjoys that stuff, it's usually not a fun conversation. It's just kind of stressful, you know, just like kind of like getting your taxes done, right? But it's necessary because, you know, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, you know it in the back of your brain that there's things that are going to happen. Good things, bad things, otherwise things, but things that you may not want to happen if you are inactive, if you don't do anything at all. You know those things are going to be true. You know that that's going to come to fruition. And you have to make the conscious choice to step in and say, wait a minute. And I've done it. I've done it at the barbershop, actually to a former teacher of mine. Somebody who was my gym teacher in middle school, wanted to sit there in the chair and talk about how easy it is to mill out these 80% lowers and create a rifle. And they make it too easy. You need to outlaw all of it. I go, after about 10 minutes of listening to him, I go, hey, I don't want to like step into your guys' conversation or anything there. But you know, I tried during COVID to build my own first upper. And let me tell you, I ruined about half the parts that I touched, because it's really not as easy as they make it look. Or they try to make it look easy on the news, because then it's easier to scare people and get them to vote against it. You need like a drill press and a lathe and stuff to do this stuff. like you really think that it's super easy. It's really not. They're not a lathe. I'm sorry, a mill. It kind of just depends on the flavor of the week or whatever the media is pushing out. They're telling you that this is the problem. Now this is the problem. I mean, everyone remembers when pistol braces, right? Pistol braces were the issue, and then it was bump stocks. Bump stocks were the issue, and then they're not. And oh, now it's 80% lower and ghost guns. And it's like, we just gave retiring ATF director Dettelbach technically a ghost gun. And they said it in the press conference, in the ceremony. It was absolutely laughable. You guys don't believe me, look it up. They said this gun can never be traced or, you know, whatever, something like that. I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Either somebody wrote this in about the most abhorrent and awful way possible, or they basically gave this man a ghost gun. And so then it comes back to that, you know, rules for thee, but not for we, which is equally upsetting. And again, you have to take those steps. You have to voice your opinion. You can't just be on the internet. A lot of people assume that if they just share a post on the internet and they bring more eyes to it, they're doing their part. And that does help the perception. But if you're trying to bring about real change, then yes, you have to take that even a step further and reach out to like your elected officials. Again, all the stuff that we talked about in the previous discussion with Sully. Hey, reach out to elected officials on both sides of the aisle. Let them know how you feel. A lot of people won't reach out to their elected officials, or they won't reach out if, you know, hey, you're, you know, libertarian or Republican. Oh, well, you know, my state senator is Democrat, so I'm not going to reach out to him. No, you're their constituent. Your vote and other people's votes like that, keeps them in office. So you should 110% let them know how you feel about that. You really should, because that can help to change the perception of, do I really think it's going to change the perception of a Democrat, a lifelong Democrat, of a lifelong politician? Maybe not. But does that mean that we should stop trying altogether? No. Do I think I'm ever going to be a millionaire? No. No, I really don't. Does that mean I'm going to stop working and I'm going to stop trying to make my life better? Fuck no. Means that, hey, I've accepted that the reality of this might be a pretty long haul for me to get there. And it might take a miracle for me to make $1 million or something. But does that mean I'm just going to stop and give up altogether because it's less likely? No. And that has to be the same way that you and I look at all of this. And guys, here's something else I want to bring up. And something we should think about too is there's like active programs and things, efforts being made that are contrary to your goals, your wishes, your desires by people that feel, I mean, potentially as passionately about these issues as you do, just in the opposite direction. Like my coworker was telling me about a program, I think it's like preschool protesters or protesters in preschool or something. It's like a program that's designed to help teach children about how to be active in their communities, which I think at its core is like, that's a cool idea. I think that we've gotten to a point, in our society where we're very comfortable just sitting back and letting shit happen. We're only about 10 or 13% of people, just like whatever our actual turnout numbers are for an election, right? Whether it's local, state, federal, like only that amount, that real percentage of people actually goes out, gets engaged in what's going on in the community, gives a shit enough to like go out and participate, right? And that's how we've gotten to this point. And this whole conversation, right, all of this up until this point has been about making your voice heard, fighting for the things that you believe in, and knowing that people on the other side of the argument, the ones who are working to take away these rights, the ones who are working, whether it's they're operating with accurate information or not, because like we talked about, perception is reality. It shapes people's beliefs. And they don't, a lot of times, like I said, people don't know what they don't know, but they have a strong set of assumptions based off of the perception that was shaped and built by, you know, whether it's the media or, whatever it is, and you have to counteract that. So why wouldn't you want to get involved or get your kids involved in these things? And I'm not saying you should go out and picket, you know, your Capitol where everybody in the family's there wearing body armor and carrying like a rifle and everything. I'm not saying you have to do that. In fact, I find that, unless it's actually to rally against taking away gun rights, I find that to be a little bit confusing, just me personally. And if someone has like good insight into that, I welcome that conversation because I would love to understand more. But there's organizations out there teaching the next generation how to continue the fight against what you want to essentially be your way of life with the way you want to, you know, live it, your rights and things like that. So, and actually, like I said, that triggered another thought, as I'm saying that, you know, I'd love to have the conversation with somebody because I want to understand it. And here's the thing that we don't do very well here. And if you don't believe me, if you guys think, hey, this Austin guy, he's just full of shit. He's just sitting here talking out his ass. Okay, cool. I 110% get that, and I support your desire to think that I'm full of shit. But look at the comment sections in any YouTube videos. People never want to hear, in the community, outside the community, whatever, they never want to hear a dissenting opinion. They never want to hear something counter to what they believe. Sometimes it's confirmation bias because they learned a tactic a different way. So therefore, anybody that does this is, you know, wrong. Or more commonly, like, you know, oh, I can't afford that. So that, you know, out of my budget equals unnecessary for ownership, which is fucking dumb. Just have an honest conversation with yourself about budgeting. And then maybe you have an honest conversation with your spouse about the budget and how to set money aside to accomplish those goals. That's why, like, I love it. People are like, you have too much fancy shit on your gun. I go, you perceive this to be fancy because you can't afford it. Like, if you can't afford it, just tell me that. And I hate doing that to people, but if you're going to come at me and tell me that I, like, waste money and I spend the money that I work for in inappropriate ways because your, either because your budget doesn't allow for it or some fucked up weird belief says that I shouldn't have it, like, fuck you. I'm not going to be nice to you about it. Like, it, that's what I tell people. Hey, if you can't afford it, just say that. Or people that want to, like, sometimes they'll bitch to me about some of the gear I run. Oh, that company, really? They make, you know, one of my favorites, like, oh, 100 concepts. They make those caps. They're too expensive. My answer now for people is, don't worry. They're not made for you. What do you mean? They're not made for you. Go ahead. Buy the knockoff one. Go buy the one that costs a third of the price. I'm sure you'll be very, very happy with the third of a quality that you get out of it. And like, well, whatever. I'll just buy another one. Like, if you want to buy them 4 and 5 times over and pay for shipping every time and waste more money, hey, man, that's cool, you know? But I digress. Being open to hearing outside input, like, again, like talking about at the very beginning, I got the opportunity to train with Kyle from Two Vets Development Group here in Michigan. Former Navy guy, does things a little bit differently than what I've learned in the classes I took with Orion Training Group, and I don't perceive what he's doing to be wrong. You know, I want to find another way to do things. Hey, you do that different. Like, show me why. Or, hey, what do you want to work on, man? And you just listen to people. And sometimes, you like, it's not always about shifting everybody else's perception. Honest conversations go both ways. Perception goes both ways. Sometimes you're the one that needs to have an alignment, an adjustment, if you will, right? To make your life better, make yourself happier, to resolve a conflict, to resolve an issue. Something that we're really bad at as men in this community, honestly, in the culture in general, is just being able to flat out admit, like, I was wrong. Hey, thank you for showing me that. I didn't know that that was a thing. I was wrong. I'm sorry I said what I said. I'm sorry I did what I did. Whatever, right? Thank you. I now know. And, you know, moving. And that's not saying that that every situation has to be that way. It's not saying that every situation is going to be that way or going to be resolved that way. But I will say that we would probably all get a lot further and be a lot happier together if people were just more open and willing to say either the words, I don't know, or I didn't know, or thank you for correcting me, and especially, I'm sorry. And that's a huge thing. I know it's a little bit like outside of, a little bit outside the perception conversation, but at the same time, I don't think that it really is. I think that we get so caught up in ego and shit that, like, we perceive ourselves to be less than whole if we are proven wrong on something. And a lot of times, like, hey, that's how you grow. Like, if you operate off the same set of perceived truths your entire life, you have grown none at all. Like, learning is literally, is displacing existing knowledge in a lot of cases, especially when you're older. Like, hey, I knew this to be true. Like, I knew that our governmental system was the best in the world and I could trust it my whole life. Until the day I didn't, you know what I mean? And my perception as a child and up through my early college years was the Democrats were the party I always wanted to throw my support behind because my dad was blue collar. He worked in a union and I had to support the Democrats because that's what we did in my household growing up. So that's what I had to do to be a good person until I didn't, you know what I mean? Like changing and shaping perception can be just as internal as external. But it all comes back to, and this is why I titled the episode I did, you know, Honest Conversations and Public Perception, but having an honest conversation with yourself and your peers is, and here's the deal with honest conversations. They're almost never awesome. Like, you may come away from going, okay, we resolved a lot, but they're typically going to be very, very fucking uncomfortable. And so imagine that if that's an internal conversation with yourself and your psyche about how this works or that works or what you think about this or that, you have to be open to the concept. You have to be open to the idea that you're wrong and therefore open to the concept of admitting, right, that you were wrong, which is something a lot of us don't do very well, you know, but we have to if we want to change things for the better. So hopefully, like, guys, I feel like I've said a whole lot here, and my intent is to, like I said when I started, carry on parts of the conversation from the discussion with Sully, talking about Community First Project, talking about how the public sees training, how the public sees law enforcement, and because of that perception and the inaccuracies of a lot of that, right, what it leads to, which is usually it's a lot of difficulties, it's a lot of struggles, it's a lot of problems for law enforcement in our country. And the harder it is for them to do their jobs means it's harder for them to protect our communities. And I know you can say everything about good cops, bad cops, dumb laws, shitty laws that you're upset about. I get all of that. But if you take that just away for a second, understand that none of it gets better until we change the perception, until we can flip the script, so to speak. And I think that continuing to have that conversation is a vital piece in making everybody happier. You're not going to please everybody, but like maybe make them happier is certainly a goal we could look at, something that we can pursue. And it connects to our goals within the 2A space to be seen and respected as not like lunatics and gun nuts and, you know, right-wing conspiracy theorists, weirdos and whatever else, but just as people who want to live our lives in a more accountable, more just a different way, right? That just kind of the freedom to be, right? So hopefully this all jives you guys, all makes sense. You know, I certainly appreciate you guys checking this out and listening. That's all I have for this week's discussion. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with me. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel, same platform, different guest, you know, all kinds of good stuff going on. So until next time, everybody, you stay safe out there. Enjoy the weather. Summer is almost here. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.